Okay, we were discussing before we get to this point. You were discussing about women wearing men's clothes and men wearing women's clothes, etc. That today there's a lot of they call unisex clothes. How does this fit into the?
Okay, the violation of the Torah of having one sex wear the other sex's clothing is only if the clothing is exclusive for that sex. And it depends on the situation and the society. In other words, at a time when women didn't wear pants, so if a woman wore pants, slacks, that would be a violation of the Torah. But however, once the style changes and women wear slacks, then it is not a violation, because it's based upon the prevalent dress of the society at the time. You understand very well the Bible at that time, you know, is specific because its customs and styles change. So there the Torah used the society as the framework. So it depends on the society and the time. If a woman is wearing pants that are, even today, if she's wearing pants that are exclusively male, then it will be a prohibition. I'm not familiar enough to know whether there is such a thing, but the woman's slacks would not be a violation. So it must be the violation is only if the person wears a garment that is exclusively the garment, the dress of the opposite sex. Okay. Getting back to the biblical verses here. In Deuteronomy, and again, of course, you understand very well that without the oral law, no one knows what these things mean, and there's no way to even guess it. I mean, to guess it in any kind of intelligent way. We are fortunate because the exact interpretation of what each one of these things is carried down and was carried down through the oral law and is in the Mishnah. The thing that we're doing is, which one did I do last? I did the... Now the next one is the one who asks an ov and yidoni. Now basically what that is that the person this is really where a person what the person does is that they get together like a seance, and they usually, I think even today they do this, they have like incense burning, okay, and then what they do is a person asks them, it's a seance, and a person asks the performer a certain question, and the answer comes from a very low voice. That is a very slight and low voice. It's pretty much like a seance today. And then these answers come from an unknown source, an unknown voice. Okay, and it could be sometimes the voice of a dead person, or something similar to that. That's the one who asks of the ov. And then the Yidoni is similar. This we don't have anymore. I've never seen this. But in the second case, they do the same kind of a thing, but with a bone of a certain bird in their mouth. And then they fall to the ground like they're struck. And then they speak from their mouth certain things that are going to happen in the future. So basically two forms. But, I think the idea is pretty much clear. And the last one is the one who is Doresh Elamesim. I mean, the person who searches after the dead. And this is what they would do in that case would be they would hunger themselves, go on these fasts, and then they would go and sleep in the graveyard and wait for the dead person to come to them in a dream in order to answer certain questions. That's basically the way they used to do it. But of course it means anyone who tries to bring back the dead or consult with the dead in order to find that information. All this is prohibited. So, but just about to cover the gamut of magical, superstition, magic, and looking for trying to gain knowledge from people that have departed, and astrology, and it covers the entire gamut, basically. I mean, the Torah is, of course, as we are fortunate to understand, thorough. So the Torah covers basically the entire gamut. All the emotions that are that man has in this realm have been dealt with in these two verses. Okay, so that's what the Torah says. Now the Torah says, the Torah continues, and that's 18:12. So what the Bible says here is, because it is the abomination of God whoever does these things. Now, here again, the word abomination, is emotionally disgusting. There's nothing emotionally disgusting if a person says, black cat crossed my path, I'm not going to go to work today. But that's an abomination. It's an abomination because what the Torah is saying is that that person is saying there is another force in the universe besides God. That's an abomination. Abomination means, whenever the Torah says abomination, it means the person is going away from God, traveling in the wrong direction. Okay? It doesn't mean something which is emotionally disgusting. It has nothing to do with that. It's philosophically disgusting. Okay? It's philosophically a horrible thing to see a person believe in some other force other than the creator of the universe and the God of justice, who meets out justice to each individual in his life according to his or her merit. That's the basic idea of the Torah. And any time a person believes that a black cat or some other thing is going to result in either their benefit or their harm, so this means that they are completely removed from the whole philosophy of Torah, which is that God gives a human being a reward and takes care of them in accordance with their level and in accordance with their merit. Not in accordance with any kind of crazy events or stars or astrology or any other kind of nonsense. It is amazing, of course. One of the most amazing facts in the world is that the Torah, when it was written at this time, the time that it was written, according to any account, there was no one in the world that believed this. Every nation in the world was superstitious. And they would search for the dead, and they would, astrology we still have today. I mean, people today still, President Reagan was made decisions based on this. So you see how strong the primitive urge is, and yet the Torah, thousands of years ago, prohibited and basically considered it an abomination to do any of these things. The Torah, thousands of years ago, is more advanced than people are today. Far, far more advanced. People today are not even on that level. So this is one of the most amazing facts in the world. As a matter of fact, Sigmund Freud was so disturbed by this, he could not comprehend it. And that's why he tried to answer it with his book of Moses and Monotheism, which he himself really wasn't happy with. And he wrote to one of his friends, he says, Moses doesn't let me sleep at night, because he could not believe that the Torah is not true, that it's just a fabrication. How is it possible that people thousands of years ago should be so advanced, more advanced than people are today? And Sigmund Freud knew more than anyone else how deeply rooted these emotions are. That was his whole life study, was a study of the unconscious, and he showed that these emotions are deeply rooted in every person. Even a modern person has traces of these things, and they're very strong. But in the primitive, they're brought out more. And he could not, at the end of his life, when he saw that he had a really sound grasp of the human mind and how it works, he just took a look at the Torah, at the Bible, and says, how is it possible that people thousands of years ago at that time, they say no one, everybody thought that people believed in this because these emotions are so powerful. So this was something which plagued him. He was never able to really fully explain. Of course, we know the answer is because the Torah was given by God, and without we would never, the people of Israel would never be able to arrive at such a level on their own. This is because God gave the Torah at Sinai. Now, verse 12, it says, of course, it's an abomination before God, anyone that does these things. And then it says, and because of these abominations, God your God is removing them from their inheritance and giving that inheritance to you. He's removing them from before you because they are involved in these abominations and you are not. Okay? Now, what the Talmud is, you know, goes through this, brings this up for a reason. Okay? And here it is. This is the opinion of the Rabbi Simon and Rabbi Josi. And the opinion is that a ben Noach prohibited. The question, of course, is if a ben Noach should do any one of these things. A ben Noach gets up in the morning and decides that it's my unlucky day, or they read the astrology column in a newspaper and they guide their life by it. Are they in violation of the seven laws of Noah? That's the question. In other words, a practical question, because today millions of people are doing this. So this is the argument. Here you have an argument between two scholars of the Talmud. One position is no, they're not in violation. The other position is yes. Now, of course, the question is, let's try to understand the position that says that they are in violation. You have to have, in order to say that you're in violation in the Talmudic system, you have to have proof, evidence. Without evidence, you can't do anything. You can't just say, no Talmudic scholar ever said, well, I feel God doesn't want me to do this. That's total nonsense. We do not know. No human being can ever say he feels that God wants such and such. We could never know that of our ways. So that's just arrogance and nonsense. Whenever a person feels that they know what God wants them to do, that's basically a egomania in the eyes of the Torah. The only way we know what God wants us to do is through prophecy and through the Torah. And the Torah is complete, and anything that we feel that we're doing because somehow or other we sense this is a righteous thing, I mean, we feel comfortable about that, that again is a primitive idolatrous kind of an emotion which the Torah is very much against. That's why the Torah says you shouldn't add anything to the Torah. So, the question is, the burden of proof on anyone that wants to say there's a violation for the Ben Noah, he has to prove it. Okay? Now, the proof that they bring, that this position brings, is based upon a principle which we have discussed a long time ago when we did the area of blasphemy. And that principle, maybe you remember, the principle was that the Torah never punishes unless it warns. That's the literal phrase. I'll explain to you again what it means. What it means is that there cannot be a punishment in the Torah for something that's not a violation. Okay? Because the Torah is not a book of punishments. It's a book of perfection. So therefore, if there is a punishment, it must mean that the person did some kind of a violation. All right? There is no punishment. There's no violation. There's no punishment. There's no such thing as a bad thing. Like there are certain religions where if certain things happen to you, that's bad. So there's a bad person. We don't have such a thing. The only thing we have is if a person violates the law, that's bad. If he doesn't violate the law, then there's nothing bad. So here, this scholar of the Talmud says, take a look at this verse, namely Deuteronomy 18:12. Look at this verse, and what does it say? It says, because of these abominations, God your God is driving these people out from before you, and he's giving you their land. All right? Now, we know God is a God of justice, the ultimate justice. As a matter of fact, if you remember, when God came to Abraham, he told him, he says, your children cannot inherit the land at this point because the sin of the Amorites is not complete. What does that mean? That means that God would never take away land from people who were entitled to it. But it just so happened that the Amorites, the people that were in the that were occupying the land of Israel, their sin reached, it seems they got deeper and deeper into idolatry, and they reached a point where they didn't deserve anymore to have rights to the land. And at that same time, the people of Israel did deserve the land. So therefore, it was just for God to cause the people of Israel to inherit the land. But God does not just simply throw people out, even though the people of Israel might merit the land of Israel, but there are other people there, and that wouldn't be just. If you read it, you remember, I'm sure, in your readings in Deuteronomy, where God says that that you'll never have the area that belongs to Esau, in the beginning of Deuteronomy. And he tells of various Moab, you're not permitted to do battle with Moab, because I'm not going to give you from the land, because they have rights of inheritance. It's not just the children of Israel that have rights of inheritance. There are other nations as well, as are clearly mentioned. God's system is just, and the children of Israel have an inheritance, and other nations have an inheritance as well. And one cannot take from the other. So this is stated pretty clearly. If you read the beginning of Deuteronomy, you'll see openly stated a few times. So God is just. Now here it states that God is driving these people out. Why? Because they have lost, they have forfeited their rights. How did they forfeit their rights? Because their lives have reached a level where simply that type of life is, in God's eyes, not worthwhile as a human being. It's not a human life anymore. It's below, it's subhuman, and therefore they don't have any rights to land or anything. Okay? So the scholar of the Talmud makes a very important point. He says, we know a principle of the oral law. And again, this is a principle. How do you know the principles that come from Sinai? A very simple method. Where there is no debate, so then the record was clear. Where they always debate, any time the Talmudic scholars will debate anything. There's no holds barred. But the only thing that prevents a debate is where the record was. They didn't debate. Everybody knew that fact. One of the principles that the Talmud has, the Talmud states, is that you cannot have a punishment unless there's a crime, unless there's a violation. So therefore, this scholar says, look over here. Here's a punishment. We see that God is chasing these people out of the land. Well, isn't that a punishment to take away people's land? I mean, what could be a greater punishment than that? So if God is punishing these people, and it says why, the reason is because these people, if you take a look, again, it repeats it again in verse 14, because these nations that you are inheriting, they turn to these Ma'onanim and the Kosmim, and the magicians. Well, it actually means the ones that, the astrology and which one's the... the Kosem is the ones that predict the future by going into a trance. So you see, the Bible states very clearly that the reason why these people are being driven out is because of these things that they do, which are basically, it doesn't say idolatry in this verse. It says because they believe in superstition and powers, magical powers. So this Talmudic scholar says, let's use our logic. We know from Sinai, one of the principles of the oral law is that if there is a punishment, then there must be a previous violation, previous crime. So obviously, all these things are crimes. Otherwise, how could God punish them? Okay? So that being the case, he says, it must be that a Ben cannot do any one of these things. And if he does any one of these things, he's in violation of the seven laws. Now the question is, how could you say there's seven laws if I've just read to you a whole slew of the Torah gives the entire gamut of every form of magic and superstition and seances and all kinds of future telling and all these type of things. Any type of, by the way, magical healing is also one of them. There's also there the two. That's also part of comes as a subdivision. I just didn't go into it. But all those type of things, incantations. All these things are clearly mentioned in the Torah. So if all these things are mentioned, how could we say that a Ben Noah is permitted to do these things? Then why is God punishing these people? Okay? So it would seem pretty... So therefore, now the question, of course, is how could they be seven if you have so many? The answer to that, which I think probably most of you already know the answer is that it would come under idolatry because it's the same exact type of behavior. Idolatry is where it reaches that's where it reaches its pinnacle. But these are also forms of Deuteronomy in verse 10. Class idolatry together with these things in verse 10, because that was an idolatrous practice to pass the children through the fire. They would sacrifice the children to the fire. They pass them through a fire. This was done for the for specific idols. So this is all. There wouldn't be a problem with the seven laws because the seven laws are not treated in the same manner as the 613 commandments. In the 613 commandments, every one of these things is a separate commandment. Okay. But in the seven laws, the seven laws are really headings. So therefore, you'd have one heading which would include idolatry and sorcery and magic and fortune telling and all this type of superstition. All these things would be included in that one heading. Problem. Okay, so there. Now, I'm sure most of you by now are convinced that it is true that this particular position in the Talmud makes sense. I mean, it's hard to argue against it. Yet we don't really, in the final analysis, we don't go according to this person. Maimonides does not agree with this position. And according to him, if Ben Noach did one of these things, he is not in violation. Okay. So of course, the question is, what do we do with this evidence that we have? What is the other position? Again, when we study Talmud, you have to get both positions. Okay. The unless somebody wants to try, I'm always, if anybody ever wants to say something, I'm always ready to step back and let you do it. This one's a little tough. Okay. The principle that we were using is that there is no such thing as a punishment. Penalty does not exist unless there is violation. All right. Now, this concept is a concept... which is, you see...
Rabbi?
Yes?
After you have articulated your position that you want to question, right. Miss Gail Ledford has one.
Okay.
Rabbi, you yes. said that there was no actual prohibition against man eating man.
Right. According to one position, yes.
What about the preservation of life that... How does that come into it?
Oh, okay. Let me clarify that. Anybody want to answer that? Maybe I'll throw it back at you. Anybody there want to answer that? I think that somebody might be able to answer that question there.
I think the answer might be from the peanut gallery that eating the person is only after they're dead. It's
exactly.
Not the killing of them.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
That's the answer, 100%. Yeah, you can't kill anybody. That's correct.
You can't kill them to eat them, but you can eat them after they're dead.
After they're dead.
If, you know, but then I think you might, see, you see how the brain works.
Right.
You've been talking now for 45 minutes, and we're back where we started from. Because
that's
it's,
correct.
That you're, now, we discussed, you and I did earlier, that there are certain morals and ethics, and you brought this out, the cannibals are on the very lowest level.
Right.
That... ethically, you just do not go out morally
right.
and eat a dead body.
Right.
But in extreme cases,
yeah.
in extreme cases, such as the example you gave last week
right.
of the people being trapped in the mountains,
yes.
and it's
right.
the bodies are dead, and it's either you eat this flesh, human flesh, or you die yourself.
Okay, maybe I'll just clarify that.
Okay.
All right. You see, the prohibition against consuming human flesh is, of course, only after the human being is dead, because to kill a human being is a major violation. Now, whether there is, for Ben Noah, by the way, there is no violation. And I discussed this with David. Let's say, now of course, when I say there's no violation, and this is extremely important, you have to understand what this means by no violation. We have different levels of violation, and that's why it's Talmud, because you get used to that concept, which is something that most people can't get used to. They either say you can or you can't. No, no, no. In the Torah, when you look at the Bible, you see sometimes there's a death penalty, sometimes it's stoning, sometimes it's a different kind of a penalty, sometimes it's stripes. So there are different penalties. Sometimes there's no penalty. Sometimes you bring a sacrifice. It depends on what the violation is. So anyone that reads the Bible, especially Leviticus, but throughout the Bible, you'll see that what God expressed in the Bible is that there are different levels of violation. And that's important because when a person does something wrong, it's not just right or wrong. It's how wrong, how bad. There's some things that are more serious, some things are less serious. A person must always know what he's doing. Even if he does something wrong, he must know what level of wrong he is on. Okay? Now, that's extremely important. So when a Talmudic scholar looks at a phenomenon, what he tries to do is he tries to place it in the framework. Well, what is this? Is this major? Is it secondary? Is it minor? Not because he wants to do it, but because he wants to understand. And if you understand the Torah, you'll understand that when something's a major violation, you have to understand why that is so horrible and why you study that, then you understand what perfection is. Of course, when we know what evil is, the opposite is perfection. So the study of evil helps us in the study of perfection. And it's extremely to study all these various things. It's a funny thing. You know, I was at somebody's home, and there was a very religious man that came to me. So he says, it's terrible, he says, what you see on television today. You see that, you know, murders are committed, horrible things are committed. Just hearing about these things is bad for us. So there was a fellow there who I had studied with in the yeshiva many years ago. He was an intelligent guy, a rabbi. He says, I don't understand you. He says, look at the Bible. The Bible has the worst things that are done. The Bible records everything, the worst horrors. So the truth of the matter is that second fellow was right. The Torah records everything. Sexual violations of individuals, it records the violations of murder, all these things are in the Bible. The Bible maintains that you have to have knowledge and study every area. And if something is more serious, you have to know why. Why does this take you away from God to a greater degree? Then you'll know how to get closer to God. The negative and the positive are inseparable. Okay? So you have to know both. Now, over here, when we say something is permissible, for instance, I said a Ben Noach is not in violation if he consumes a human being. What I mean at this point is he is not in violation of the seven laws of Noah. Okay? Did he do something wrong? I'll tell you what, yes, but not the seven laws. What he did wrong is that in the Bible it says that a human being is supposed to be treated. If you remember in Deuteronomy, it says that when...
Rabbi?
Yes?
I hate to do this to you, but we really only have 60 seconds and we're trimming it.
60 seconds?
Yes.
All right. So there is a certain being to consume, to use the human being as food is obviously a breach in dignity. But that is a philosophical, for Ben Noach, that is a philosophical violation, not an halachic violation. And we have to distinguish between the two. Because there, as I said last time, there is a system of halacha, and then there's a system of perfection. If a Ben Noach would do that, certainly he would be on an extremely low level. But would you have to remove him? Is he a violation of the technical seven laws? No, he is not. Where does he stand in relationship to God? He is distant from God. So we have to distinguish between the halacha and between perfection. And we come back to that same area. We have to categorize exactly what we're discussing. So we'll continue this next week. I think we're running out of time. Okay. Have a good night, everybody.